It's 8 o'clock. This is KVNF Regional News for Tuesday, September 29th. I'm Patricia Naft. Early Sunday morning, a plane crashed in Garfield County. The single-engine Cessna went down after flying out of Glenwood Springs. The plane flipped over and landed on the ground upside down. The passenger was able to crawl out, but the pilot remained pinned in the wreckage until emergency crews arrived. Both were treated at Valley View Hospital. The National Transportation Safety Board will be investigating the crash. NTSB also just released their findings on a helicopter crash that happened over a year and a half ago outside of Silt in Mesa County. The Daily Sentinel reports that a combination of poor planning and the angle of the sun were reasons cited as to why the very seasoned pilot flew into a power line late January 2014. Both the pilot and the passenger were killed. They were inspecting power lines for Holy Cross at the time when they flew into Excel power lines unexpectedly. The Western Slopes' new dispatch center continues to grow. KVNF's Jake Ryan has more.
The center is a hub, routing 911 callers to the appropriate emergency services. Right now, a large section of the Western Slope is served by a dispatch center run by Montrose County. Over the past year, though, the City of Montrose and other agencies who subscribe have complained as fees skyrocketed, tripling in 1 year for some governments. After talks broke down, the City of Montrose decided to start their own call center. Montrose Police Chief Tom Chin says that six agencies have signed on to subscribe to this new service.
Agencies are the City of Montrose, the Town of Olathe, the Town of Telluride, the Town of Mountain Village, Montrose Fire District, as well as Telluride Fire District.
Those six agencies account for over 60% of the traffic for the old dispatch center, meaning that center will lose about 60% of its revenue from fees. Chin says that one of the highlights of this new center is that the books will be open. Any and all financial decisions will be made by the groups involved.
The transparency of this dispatch center will be second to none because all of the agencies will know exactly where they stand, where they're at, what it's going to cost, and why it costs as much as it does.
Transparency, says Chin, is something that the old center is lacking. For KVNF, I'm Jake Ryan.
In the 2016 legislative session, Democratic State Representative Millie Hamner will chair the Joint Budget Committee. Hamner represents House District 61. It covers parts of Delta and Gunnison counties, along with Summit, Lake, and Pitkin counties. As part of a district tour, she stopped in Paonia over the weekend. KVNF's Laura Pomisano sat down with Hamner in the studio to discuss school funding, the state budget, and the upcoming legislative session.
The Colorado Supreme Court recently ruled that the state's method for cutting public school funding is constitutional. During the recession, the state cut nearly $1 billion from public schools. What do you think of the ruling? What does it mean for schools?
Well, on one hand, you could say, gee, the state of Colorado won this lawsuit. And that wasn't my takeaway when I first heard the results, because I feel that however the ruling turned out, my bottom line is trying to figure out how to get more funding for schools. So, you know, the ruling showed that what the state has been doing is constitutional, but as far as I'm concerned, it still isn't adequate for funding our schools.
So what exactly does this ruling do then?
So the lawsuit basically said that the state's calculation using what's called the negative factor is constitutional. So the difference in the state's version versus what the proponents of Amendment 23 had hoped for is that the state calculates the inflationary increase every year on the base per pupil funding versus the total program funding. So that was really the heart of the difference. The bottom line is what the lawsuit said is that how the state is calculating school funding, including the negative factor, is constitutional. What that means is that schools are receiving less than they had hoped for. Fortunately, with the Colorado economy recovering, we have been able to gradually increase school funding every year, not to the degree that the proponents of Amendment 23 would have hoped for, but we have been able to make increases every year.
Next year, you're going to be the chair of the Joint Budget Committee. What are some of your ideas on how schools can be better funded in Colorado?
One suggestion that has been made is the possibility of exempting a fee that we collect in hospitals from the Tabor cap It was a fee that was implemented after the approval of the voters of Referendum C. So there's an argument that could be made that it was revenue that wasn't intended to count towards the cap. So if we are able to reach bipartisan agreement on that concept, that frees up several hundred million dollars. As we look at one of our revenue projections, if we aren't able to reach agreement around exempting some of the revenues from the cap, the state is going to have a very difficult time funding schools at the Amendment 23 rate that has been approved by the Supreme Court.
The state's latest revenue forecast shows employment is growing along with wages and salaries, but the state will face budget challenges. How can this be?
It's very confusing. And even worse, we're receiving right now as a budget committee two different forecasts. One comes from the governor's office and one comes from legislative council. And both of them are slightly different. But what's happening with the budget is that we're reaching what's called the Tabor cap, and we will be most likely issuing taxpayer refunds. And that's kind of capping the funding, the amount of revenue that we can use for needs that people have throughout the state.
Last session, school testing, funding for the IUD program, and the state budget were big issues. What do you think will be big issues this session?
Well, I think the budget's probably going to be the biggest discussion this next session if we're not able to reach some agreements around whether or not whether we have some wiggle room towards the Tabor cap. It's going to be very difficult to pass legislation. Oftentimes, legislation comes with some kind of fiscal note. So I think that'll probably be our biggest issue. I'm hoping the issues related to school curriculum and assessment can kind of quiet down so we can allow the current system to play out for another year without, again, making policy changes to K-12 education. I've been serving on a couple interim committees, so I'll be carrying some legislation about wildfire protections. I'm also working on off-highway vehicle policies. I know those are a couple issues that'll be important to this part of the district as well.
Thank you for your time, Millie.
It's lovely to be here, Laura. Thank you.
And that was State Representative Millie Hemner speaking to KVNF's Laura Pomisano. Colorado held its first public hearing on how to comply with the federal government's new clean power plan. Reporting for Inside Energy, Matt Richmond says the state still has a long way to go.
Power plants in Colorado will have to reduce the carbon dioxide they emit by a total of either 31 or 38%, depending on how the state decides to measure emissions. At today's hearing, the Air Pollution Control Division's Chris Kalkisher said the state is just beginning to develop its plan and is considering everything from carbon trading to new renewable incentives. The EPA issued CO2 emissions targets for each state in August. A plan for meeting the target is due by September 2016, but officials in Colorado already say they will apply for a two-year extension. The next public hearing will be in Durango in November. For Inside Energy, I'm Matt Richmond.
For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.